जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, गोपी जन बलवा गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन बलवा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनन्दना व्रज जन रञ्जना, यशोदनन्दना व्रज जन रञ्जना, जमुना तीरा पनचारी, जमुनाधीरा वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, गोपी जन बल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन बल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रञ्जना, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रञ्जना, जमुनातीरा वनचारी, जमुनातीरा वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य स्थल सरस्वती श्रीमद A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Sri Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotra Satsi Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Nandagaudi Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Nama Acharya Sri Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem se kaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Guru Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinatha Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Swami ki jai. Ganga Mayi ki jai. Jamuna Mayi ki jai. Tulsi Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Sanadvaita Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hare Hare Ho. So, Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Before we chant the verse, I would just like to introduce Purushottaraya Swami, who is visiting here. I've known him since, I guess, 77 around there. And Purushottaraya Swami is from Brazil. He joined the movement and became a leading book distributor. Actually, he was a national champion at a time when that was not an easy achievement in Brazil. And eventually took sannyas, has spent a lot of time in India and Vrindavan, and of course traveled throughout Brazil and other places. And he is, for the last several years, he has been inspiring and participating in a rural project in a beautiful area on the Atlantic coast of Brazil, in the state of Rio de Janeiro, up in the mountains overlooking the ocean. It's very beautiful. He has a slideshow, and I think we're arranging for him to present it to the community. You will not be disappointed. It's actually one of the most extraordinary projects I've ever seen. Prabhupada talks so much about self-sufficiency, and I think without a doubt this is one of the most advanced projects in the world in ISKCON in self-sufficiency. It's an amazing project, and if you watch the show, I'm very sure you won't be disappointed. It's an extraordinary project, and so Purushottaraya Swami will be here for a few days, and I hope everyone will take advantage of his association. So, having said that, I will chant this verse. Sa prasida tvam asmakam akankshatam darshanam te paribhrashta sat karmanam kirtyamane nribhir namni yagyesha te yagya vigna kshayam yanti tasmai namah. Saprasida tvam asmakam akankshatam. Saprasida tvam asmakam akankshatam. Darshanam te paribhrashta satkarmanam. Darshanam te paribhrashta satkarmanam. Kirtyamane nribhirnamni jagyeshate. Kirtyamane nribhirnamni jagyeshate. Yagya vigna kshayam janti tasmai namaha. Yagya vigna kshayam janti tasmai namaha. So as you may have noticed, this has, there's sort of an unusual rhythm here. Sanskrit meter is a great science, and they, all of our shastras in Sanskrit, pay great attention to the meter, the rhythm of the verse, based on long and short syllables. And this one has an unusual meter, which is actually somewhat broken, or which actually reflects what the verse is about. It's very interesting, from a literary point of view. Anyway, saprasida tamasmakam akankshatam. Darshanam te paribhrashta satkarmanam. Kirtyamane nribhirnamni jagyeshate. Yagya vigna kshayam janti tasmai namaha. Saprasida saprasida tamasvakam akanchatam darshanante parivrashta satkarmanam kirtyamane nirvirnam ni jagesate saprasida tvamasmakam akanchatam darshanam te paribhrashta satkarmanam kirtyamane nirvirnam nijagyesate yajna vignakshayam yanti tasmai namah saprasida tamasmakam akanchatam darshanam te parivrashta satkarmanam kirtyamane nirvirnam nijagyesate yajna vignakshayam. So ladies, saprasida tamasvakam akanchatam parinchanam te parivrashta satkarmanam yagya vignate. Saprasida tamasmakam akanchatam darshanam te parivrashta satkarmanam kirtyamane nirvirnam nijagyesate So, Prabhupada's translation and purport for this verse. Saha means that same person. Prasida, be pleased. Twam, you. Asmakam, upon us. Akankshatam, awaiting. Darshanam, audience. Te, your. Parivrashta, fallen down. Satkarmanang, of whom the performance of sacrifice. Kirtimane, being chanted, revered by persons. Namni, your holy name, Yajna Isha, O Lord of Sacrifice, Te, your Yajna Vigna, obstacles to sacrifice. Kshayam, destruction, Yanti attain, Tasmai unto you, Nama, respectful obeisances. So Prabhupada's translation, dear Lord, we were awaiting your audience because we have been unable to perform the yajnas, sacrifices, according to the Vedic rituals. We pray unto you, therefore, to be pleased with us simply by chanting your holy name. One can surpass all obstacles. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you in your presence. Purport, the Brahmin priests were very hopeful that their sacrifice would be carried out without obstacles now that Lord Vishnu was present. It is significant in this verse that the Brahmanas say, simply by chanting your holy name we can't surpass the obstacles, but now you are personally present. The performance of Yajna by Daksha was obstructed by the disciples and followers of Lord Shiva. The Brahmanas indirectly criticized the followers of Lord Shiva, but because the Brahmins were always protected by Lord Vishnu, Shiva's followers could not do any harm to their prosecution of the sacrificial process. There's a saying that when Krishna protects someone, no one can do him harm, and when Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can protect him. The vivid example was Ravana. Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but when Lord Ramchandra wanted to kill him, Lord Shiva could not protect him. If some demigod, even Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, wants to do harm to a devotee, Krishna protects the devotee. But when Krishna wants to kill someone such as Ravana or Hiranyakashipu, no demigod can protect him. Prabhupada Kija. Saprasida Twamasmakam Akangsatam Darshanam Te Parivrashta Satkarmanam Kirtyamane Nrivirnam Nijagyeshate Yagya Vigna Chayang Yanti Tasmai Namaha. So, let's look at this verse. First, the sages pray, Prasida. Be merciful. Prabhupada translates this, be pleased. Prasida is from the same root as the word prasadam. We all know what prasadam is. So, in fact, when classes go too long, people think a lot about prasadam. But this is, so prasadam means grace or mercy or etc., etc., that which is pleasing. So prasida here is the verb, be pleased or be merciful, bestow grace and so on. So sa-twam, this is an interesting way of speaking in Sanskrit. Sa means he and twam means you. So literally it's saying he, you. He, you, be pleased. Sa prasida twam. But in Sanskrit, this is the way of saying, so to speak, that you yourself, or you, the very person, you, that person, and so on, be pleased. So it's a way of emphasizing that you are the one, you are the very person. Sa twam prasida, and be pleased, or be merciful, asmakam, unto us, asmakam, unto us, akangshatam, who are, Prabhupada says, awaiting. Also, akangshatam often means earnestly desiring. Just like in the Gita, nakangsha, brahmabhuta prasanatma nashochati nakangshati. So the verb kangsh, which means to yearn for something, to eagerly desire something, akangshati. So you yourself, or you that very person, please be pleased or be merciful unto us who are earnestly desiring darshanam te, your darshanam. We are earnestly desiring your darshanam. We who are paribhrashta satkarmanam, our satkarma, our spiritual activities, satkarma, are now paribhrashta, messed up, basically. Prabhupada translates paribhrashta, fallen down, brushta. This word is used by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, yoga brushta, one who's fallen from yoga. So brushta means something which is fallen or deviated or impeded, and pari, completely. From this, it means going around, like in the sense of completely, as in parikrama, etc. So, darshanam te paribhrashta satkarmanam. So please be merciful unto us whose satkarmas, whose our spiritual activities have been impeded or fallen, and so on. And they then glorify Krishna by saying, kirtyamane nribhir namni. When your name is being chanted by human beings or by people, kirtyamane, when it is being chanted, namni, your name, revered by people, yagyesha, O Lord of sacrifice, te, your name, te means your name, your, then yagya vigna kshayang yanti, the vigna means an obstacle, impediment, and so the obstacles to sacrifice, yagya vigna, the obstacles to sacrifice, yanti, literally go, the obstacles to sacrifice, go, kshayam, to destruction. This is a very common way of speaking in Sanskrit, that something goes to something else. In other words, it becomes something else or something happens to it. So, yagya vigna kshayang yanti, the sacrifice obstacles go to perdition. They go to their destruction. They're removed. Tasmai unto you, unto that Lord, namaha, obeisances. The word namaha is also interesting. The word namaha literally means bow, to bow. It comes from a Sanskrit root, nam, N-A-M, which means to bend or bow. Like if you think in English, there are two words which are pronounced differently, but are really the same word. One word is bow, and the other word is bow, like bow and arrows. It's actually the same word, because if you think of the shape of a bow, and then the shape that you make with your body when you bow, it's... Anyway. So, just like we say a rainbow, because it has the shape of a bow, like a bow and arrow, so in Sanskrit they call it an Indradhanu, an Indra bow. Indra is also used to mean rain. So that's why they say rainbow in Sanskrit, Indradhanu, an Indra bow. But anyway, so the word namaha, which we often translate, please, that I offer my respectful obeisances, literally just means a bow. A bow unto you. So, now, this verse is very relevant to us. This verse is quite relevant to us because those of us who are dedicated to Krishna consciousness, or trying to dedicate ourselves, are actually dedicated to sacrifice. After all, this is the Sankirtan movement, which means it's the sacrifice movement. Now, externally, our sacrifice looks differently. It looks different. Here, back in this ancient Vedic age, people would sit around these fires, sacrificial fires. We can't really envy them in that sense because India is a tropical country and it's usually hot enough as it is. And to sit around a fire all day or many days shows a lot of sincerity. But they would do that. They would sit around a big fire. There was, of course, these things were extremely technical and precise, and there are exact ways in which sacrifices would be done, the ground you could do it on, how the ground was prepared, and there were often several fires for important sacrifices. There was a fire for the demigods, offering to the demigods or to the Lord, fire for the forefathers, for the earth, and the sacrificial arena became like a microcosm of the universe, and the priests would move around the different sacrifices, and it would actually be, in a sense, moving around the universe. And of course, and the mantras, often there would be four priests to monitor and perform the sacrifice. It was extremely technical. It was science. It was extremely technical because it was science. And technical science tends to be like that, because it has to be very precise. It depends upon the precision of it. It's like, I mean, think of a microchip or something. If one tiny little thing is just the wrong size or the material is not made properly, then it just doesn't work. Think, for example, on these, what do they call them? These shuttle flights, these NASA rocket flights. If some little thing is wrong, the whole thing can blow up. So sacrifices like that, it was a very technical precision science. However, the spirit was the same when it was done spiritually. When it was done spiritually, the spirit was the same, and that is simply to surrender to Krishna. So externally it's different. We now talk about the fire of Sankirtan being in the fire. But we are trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement as Prabhupada has trained us. So that is sacrifice. So everything that's said here about sacrifice also applies to us. So what here the sages are saying that our spiritual activities have been impeded. 500 years ago approximately, I guess the time will come when you can't say 500 years ago talking about Lord Chaitanya, because like 100 years now, we're just so used to saying that, but I think we better stop and count one of these days. But approximately 500 years ago, imagine like 1,000 years from now, they'll be saying 500 years ago when Lord Chaitanya appeared. Anyway, so About 500 years ago, Advaita Acharya, probably now about 520 years ago, 530 years ago, Advaita Acharya and the Vaishnavas were very unhappy because in Navadvip, people were not interested in Krishna consciousness in that Nadia district. So the situation in the world today is very much like that. Of course, some people appreciate our movement, but in general, people are extremely materialistic. If you read, I've just been listening to a recording of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and if you listen to the descriptions of society back then and how the devotees felt and the struggle to try to spread Krishna consciousness, it's very, very much like what we experience, what we feel. It's remarkably similar. It's the easiest thing in the world to identify with that period just before Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Of course, Lord Chaitanya has appeared. We have been given this Sankirtan movement, but still, it's an extremely materialistic, consumerist, ignorant, superficial age. For one thing, we can objectively say, even in terms of material observation, that the world moves much faster now. With all this technology, everything is accelerated. And I always like to think of the analogy of a boat on the water. If you've done much boating in your devotional service or before you join the movement, when a boat is going very fast on the water, it's very high on the water. Sometimes it's actually out of the water, like they have these, I forget what you call them. What?
Hydrofoils.
Yeah, hydrofoils, exactly. That literally are out of the water. Now, when a boat goes, the slower it goes, the more it sinks into the water, the deeper it is in the water. So, my point here is that the faster society moves, the faster life moves, the more superficial it is, the more shallow it is, the more it's on the surface. Because, for example, if you're running down the street, you can't run down the street and write a letter at the same time. There are certain activities you simply cannot perform at certain speeds. You have to slow down. Similarly, there are certain mental activities that you cannot perform at a certain speed. You've got to stop and slow down and think about things. And life goes so fast nowadays that literally it's almost physiologically impossible for people to think deeply. And we find that we live in an extremely unphilosophical age. Those of us who are from a previous generation, and of course very arrogant about it, we came from an age when people actually were seriously concerned about knowledge with a capital K, like searching for the truth with a capital T. What is the truth? And before the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was an extremely lively and even historically significant debate going on in the world about what's the best way to organize human society. How should people's basic needs be satisfied? How should government be constituted? There was this whole debate, communism, socialism, capitalism, and so on. And now, with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the blooping of China from communism, the debate is really over. I mean, that was almost the last serious interest society in general had in philosophy. If you look at the sociology of philosophy, in the sense if you look at the role that philosophy and philosophers played in society, you find that, let's say, a few hundred years ago in Europe, philosophers were people, almost like, you know, professional athletes nowadays. Philosophers were very famous people. They were kind of celebrities in some ways. And that, of course, there were a lot of, so to speak, peasants that weren't very educated. But among educated people, among people that had some education or even literate, philosophy was a very important part of life. People really cared about it. And even if you go back into some of the nastier periods of European history when all these religious wars and persecutions, but they took theology very seriously. We could say too seriously. That was a case, I think, of taking theology too seriously and killing each other over it. But still, there's the fact that we look back in history, there were many times when people took theology or philosophy very seriously. It was an important part of life. People cared about the truth. Nowadays, it's just the truth of how much money you make and what your retirement plan is and things like that. And the truth of whether or not, you know, you can get your kid off drugs or whether the kids can get their parents off drugs. And So the point I want to make is that society is going so quickly, it is so materialistic, that the only period I can think of historically when there was this little interest in philosophy is the Dark Ages. You know, the collapse of Greco-Roman civilization, the collapse of the Roman Empire, and the Dark Ages, where people, there was very little philosophy. There's an incredibly small amount of interest nowadays in philosophy and in the very idea that it's important in life to know the truth. Because, again, life moves so fast that people's minds are going at a speed which is extremely superficial and shallow. So, it was interesting for us because here we are in the Hare Krishna movement, and one of our, perhaps our main preaching point has always been, this is the greatest philosophy. And so here we are, we have the greatest philosophy at a time when there's very little interest in philosophy. That's one fact about the world nowadays. It's an unusually stupid historical period. So that's one point. So we also are, people don't join religious communities in the way they did in previous ages. There was a time when it was a normal thing to make a serious commitment to the religious life or to spiritual life, to join a spiritual community, to become a priest. And that was a normal thing at one point. Again, nowadays, I mean, it's not just us. Look at the Catholic Church. They used to send missionaries from Europe and from America all around the world. Now they have to bring in priests from third world countries, just as we do. How many temples in North America are largely staffed by people from third world countries? So this is, again, a feature of first world countries like America, that people are not philosophical. People tend to not to join or take up priestly vocation. In other words, not to take up religion as a vocation, as a career, the way they used to. So it's a nasty age we live in many ways. A stupid, spiritually lazy, ignorant age, to be perfectly honest about it. So the sages therefore say, when your name is chanted, when people chant your name, then the obstacles to sacrifice are removed. The obstacles to sacrifice are removed. So, our chanting of Hare Krishna, the quality of our chanting, the quality of our japa, the quality of our kirtan, is directly related to the fate of the world. Because by our pure chanting, we actually become inspired and empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. And when we chant purely, people will be attracted, certainly far more attracted. So the quality of our chanting affects the world. Now, I will tell a little Prabhupada story here that took place in Los Angeles. Walking at the Santa Monica Park, I'll very briefly, it's an interesting story, that Prabhupada used to, of course, spend a lot of time in Los Angeles at various times, and he had a routine where one day he would walk at Venice Beach and one day he would walk at Rancho Park. He would change every day. So when I was in L.A. in 74 and 75, especially 75, working on the BBT, Spanish BBT, I had begun to walk at the Santa Monica Park on the cliffs there, the Palisades Park in Santa Monica. And so I thought, Prabhupada would probably like this. This is a really nice park because it's green and there's gardens like Rancho Park, but it also has the ocean there. So Radha Ballabha Prabhu was then managing Prabhupada's walk, and I told him that we should take Prabhupada to that park. And he said, no, Prabhupada doesn't want to go there, which showed remarkable insight into Prabhupada's wishes. And the reason he gave was that Prabhupada, he said, because it took like about 4 or 5 minutes longer to get there. So I kept insisting. So finally he said, okay, we'll go there one time and you'll see that Prabhupada doesn't want to go there. So one day we all drove to Santa Monica Park. Prabhupada got out and started walking. And he stopped after a minute and said, this is the best place in Los Angeles to walk. So that was actually the end of Venice Beach and Rancho Park. Prabhupada actually never went back there. So after that, every day, he went to the Palisades Park in Santa Monica. Anyway, so we were walking there one time in January of 1976 with Prabhupada. In December of 1975, the Latin American zone, it was all one zone then, had won the December book distribution marathon. It was the first time that Radha Damodar had lost, the Radha Damodar TSKP. And so in January of 76, I came to see Prabhupada in L.A. and Tamal Krishna Goswami came, and we were walking with Prabhupada in the park there. And Prabhupada was kind of like, not provoking Tamal, but he was sort of joking and encouraging the competition. He was saying to Tamal something like, are you going to take that? He said like, so, no one ever defeated you. Now you've been defeated. So what are you going to do? And he was joking like that. Because I was walking on one side of Prabhupada and Tamal was on the other side. So then Prabhupada, I remember he stopped and he said, I like this competition. I like this competition. So, I mention this because we're talking about sacrifice, and the sacrifice that we must perform is the Sankirtan movement, distributing books and distributing the holy name of Krishna. And Prabhupada taught and expressed that a healthy Krishna-conscious competition was actually a very good thing. It actually enlivened people. And so, of course, in the past, in the ancient history of ISKCON, spiritual competition can come to the point where the people we're trying to save merely exist as just so that we can pile up points. In other words, our concern becomes each other. Like I'm concerned with winning and I want to do better than you and you want to do better than me, and we're so focused on defeating each other that the people we're saving are only exist to facilitate the competition. And obviously at that point, there's a problem. Or if I dovetail my own vanity, my own pride, my own desire to lord it over other people, if I'm dovetailing my own, well, the dark side of the force, in the name of a Sankirtan competition. But if we can do this in a real Krishna-conscious spirit, with real sportsmanship, you allowed to say that? Do you have to say sportspersonship nowadays? Sportspersonship. If we can do it with the proper spirit, a proper Krishna-conscious spirit, but to somehow, I want to mention one other point before I am dragged off the air, before people start fleeing the class, and that is that, what was the point that, it's often said nowadays that ISKCON has become a congregational movement. And of course that's more or less true in different places. LA is certainly probably the most outstanding example in America of a temple that really is focused on preaching and has a powerful ashram community in addition to congregational development. But in general, to a large extent around America, things are congregationally based, the financial base is congregational and so on. That's certainly true in my little GBC zone, my little mini zone. So, but the point is that the congregations tend not to be so much focused on national competitions. They tend to be more focused on local things, local programs. And so how do we revive in a healthy, pure way in national competition, even international competition, which Prabhupada thought was very healthy for the Sankirtan movement, without falling into the trap of becoming mundane in the sense of just wanting to defeat other people or wanting to show off or forgetting about the people we're trying to save? And how do we do that? How do we enthuse and enliven the members of ISKCON? Because there was a time when, those of us who are a little older remember it, there was a time when most of the people in ISKCON, most of the membership of ISKCON in this country and other countries, really was in the spirit of competing with each other in a nice way, and also really trying to save the world, save the country, and throughout ISKCON, the spirit was there. But now we live in a time where many of the members, especially in a congregational movement, are not primarily focused on quote-unquote saving the world or competing with other congregations in other parts of the country they've never been to. And so how do we do all this? How do we revive this spirit in a mature, appropriate way, not to repeat the abuses of the past, but in a mature, appropriate way to really revive a spirit of competition where we're on the march, it's really a movement. I often raise the point that we always speak about ourselves as a movement, but let's say a sociologist who had nothing for us or nothing against us, was just interested in being objective, looked at many of our temples, would he say this is a movement or just a religion? What does it mean? In other words, where's the line? Is there a line you cross where on one side of the line you're a religion, on the other side you're a movement? If we look at churches, for example, many churches have outreach programs. They send out missionaries. They put Bibles in different places. They very enthusiastically welcome new members, but they wouldn't think of themselves as a movement. They would just think of themselves as a church. So what are the responsibilities? By calling ourselves a movement, what responsibility are we taking on ourselves, and to what extent do we meet that responsibility? So I think that the impediments to sacrifice are not simply the ignorance and materialism of the people, which is certainly a real fact about the world now, but another impediment is, of course, our own internal impediments, what we have to do internally as a society within ISKCON. How do we develop a consciousness in which ISKCON as a movement is mobilized? ISKCON as a national movement is mobilized and is with healthy competition and so on and so forth. So I think we also have to pray to remove whatever lethargy is in us. It's a fact of life. Prabhupada always used to say that I came to your country at an advanced age, and he would always say that no one leaves home at that age. At that age, everyone wants to be comfortable. And frankly, the older I get, the more I can relate to that, the desire to be comfortable. I mean, you get to a certain age where, you know, I remember my father when he was, you know, young, maybe in his 20s, he had a friend who was a stunt pilot. He would like go up in this, you know, just recklessly go up in this plane and do all kinds of crazy things. And by the time he was in his 70s, he would get nervous just driving around curves, you know, like in Franklin Canyon Park. So it's definitely true that as you get older, you're just not as reckless, but you're also not as, you don't take risks as much. People tend to want to be comfortable and just to have their comforts assured. It's really true. It's something physiological. So as ISKCON has obviously now a middle-aged leadership for the most part, and even some people who are getting to the point where they wish they were middle-aged. So as we come to that point, how do we engage all the maturity and the experience and the wisdom that comes from age, but at the same time have the vitality, the courage, the boldness, the innovation of youth? So anyway, these are challenges facing us if we want to successfully perform the sacrifice which we've been given by Krishna. So, any questions on these points? Yes, sir.
Thank you for a very nice class. Of course, being one of those individuals that's in that middle class or middle-aged position, or wish I was, it appears to me that you're making some very good points about ISKCON in general. It appears to me that ISKCON as a whole has lost its enthusiasm. I go to different places as you do, and I see that the enthusiasm for the mission has been decreased considerably. Because when we were younger devotees, we had an enthusiasm for fulfilling the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, we're ready to sacrifice our bodies, our families. I find that these days, the devotees that come, they don't have that enthusiasm. And neither do the senior devotees like myself. It's very difficult to enthuse them. It's very difficult to put that enthusiasm within them. I find a lot of devotees today are concerned about their body. They're concerned about their mind. They're concerned about their livelihood. They're concerned about their future. The list can go on and on and on. But when it comes down to just having pure enthusiasm to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, it's very difficult for them. And I believe that as senior devotees, it's our problem. We're the ones that we're not able to instill within them this enthusiasm that Prabhupada instilled within us at that very late age in life. It was incredible that we couldn't keep up with Prabhupada when he did a morning walk. Neither could we preach as vigorously as he could. He would drop everything in order just to go do a program. If he came to a temple, he traveled halfway around the world or around the world, and he came to a place, immediately he'd go to a program, preach, get people to become inspired. At that very ripe age, he would instill within us the competition, the mood of competition. He would tell us that he'll live to be 100 if you double book distribution. If you say anything about doubling book distribution today, they'll look at you and say, you dinosaur, what are you doing? You're just going to create animosity. People aren't going to like us. You got to like slow down. If you're too enthusiastic, I find that people tend to like look at you as, well, don't worry, he'll burn out sooner or later. Just don't pay any attention to him. Just do your own thing. Move at your own pace. Don't go to Mangal Arati every day because you'll get tired. You'll get run down. You'll have to get some geritol or don't waste your body. So these are the different things that I experienced as a temple president. And it's one of those things that I find in a lot of devotees today. They just don't have the enthusiasm that it takes. And I heard one lecture by Srila Prabhupada where he said that one shouldn't even try to understand Krishna. One should just be enthusiastic to serve Krishna. And in that way, one will understand Krishna. And Prabhupada said that his Guru Maharaj used to say that all the time. He'd always say that, don't try to understand Krishna by your limited knowledge in your mind, but just simply enthusiastically serve Krishna. And in that way, Krishna will appear before you. And you'll be able to speak with Krishna, see Krishna. So I think this thing about enthusiasm is a very important issue. And those of us as senior devotees, we should try our best to instill that within the younger devotees.
Very good. Very well spoken. And I certainly have to take on myself that responsibility that you mentioned, that we have to also get off our asanas. And this is very true. I mean, what you said is very true. And so I think those of us who are senior devotees, of course, it's a lot more fun to criticize the younger devotees, but we'll have to give up that pleasure and try to get serious ourselves.
Hare Krishna. Yes, thanks, Maharaj, for a very nice class. Before everybody disperses, I just wanted to say that we're going to ask Purushottaraya Maharaj to give the class on Friday morning, but then Thursday evening we'd like him to make his presentation about his activities in Brazil. So if everybody that's here now would come, we'd have a nice audience. Thursday evening instead of the Bhagavad Gita class, which means come for the 6:30 RT, and then from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, Maharaj can make his presentation.
I saw it yesterday, and it's amazing. I think that if you come to see it, you will not be disappointed, and you will be very glad you didn't miss it. It's an extraordinary project. So many things that Prabhupada said we should do, they're actually doing. And then I think this evening, since we're making a little announcement, I think we're going to have a little darshan at my ashram, or whatever it is where I live. So you're all welcome. I think around 6 o'clock. Any other questions? Yes. Oh, do you want to use a microphone? I think a lot of people are listening in other places. So,
you were speaking how this is such a fallen age. However, I see everywhere how Prabhupada's influence is everywhere. I just recently had to buy a car, and my car dealer, he's from New York, and he sells to devotees a lot. But he asked me, he said, what do you guys think about, you know, the this New Orleans and the fires? And I said, that's collective karma. He goes, oh, that word, I learned about what that means. And so I'm very careful to be very honest. And at school, I'm going to school. My teacher was, he is a devotee, a Vaishnava from Bangalore. And girls in the class are down the computer room. She goes, oh, you're a Hare Krishna. I go, yeah. She goes, I've been watching you for 5 years. And I mean, there are so many favorable people everywhere.
It's very true. There are many favorable people. And we want to take it to the next step, where people actually start to take up Krishna consciousness as their primary spiritual orientation. There are good things about this age. There are many favorable people. We all meet favorable people. But people, we want to somehow, as Savas is saying, we have to instill in the devotees and even in people in general the desire to really join Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement so that the world can be, because even though there are many favorable people, the world is very much going to hell in a handbasket. And so we want to take it to the next step. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.